happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
And we're smiling, but of course we're taping on Tuesday when the world seems to be on the verge of World War III, if we seem a little disoriented. But we do have the news.
Well, let's not catastrophize, Andy. There is enough for us to get upset about.
Well, let's give them some good news, because that Democrat hold on the U.S. Senate is really good news for LGBTQ rights.
Are you falling for the Republican usage of Democrat rather than Democratic?
Well, it's no, but it's the.
Well, don't let me fluster you at the beginning of the show. Second headline, Democrat Katie Hobbs has been elected governor of Arizona, defeating the anti-LGBTQ Republican Carrie Lake, who turned against her drag queen friends. And one of them is celebrating that.
The Senate is voting on the Respect for Marriage Act that will repeal the Anti-Gay Defense of Marriage Act.
It's complicated, but we will explain it in hopes that we can all understand it. A Michigan town again voted down funding for their library over its inclusion of LGBTQ books.
A Trump judge has ruled that the Affordable Care Act does not protect LGBTQ people in healthcare.
No, why should it? At least two young men in New York City have been drugged, robbed, and killed, leaving gay bars with strangers. And the number of victims may be much, much higher.
A gay cop is suing the Pentagon over their policy excluding HIV positive from enlisting in the military.
The out gay voice of Batman in hundreds of movies, mostly animated movies, has died.
And Madame Tussauds just unveiled a gay icon. Well, what a weekend.
It was a roller coaster of emotions. We've been sitting biting our fingernails day after day as these very close races seesawed back and forth. But in the end, the Democrats have pulled out a victory in the United States Senate.
Well, they've got their 50 senators. We just have to hope that Manchin and Sinema don't decide to jump the other party, which has certainly been rumored about Manchin. But anyway, that 50, and if Raphael Warnock defeats Herschel Walker, that'll be 51. And
I'm feeling pretty good about Warnock.
Yes, but the biggest issue. Look, it looks like we're going to lose the House very, very narrowly, and boy, are they going to have a hell of a time herding cats over there. But this gives the president the power to confirm his nominees, especially to the federal bench, but to almost anything. And that is a huge, huge breakthrough.
Yes. And people talk about the Warnock vote as being important for Democrats being able to actually control committees because they've had to deal with a 50-50 split on committees. Now they can actually have a majority on committees, so it's much less onerous to get bills out of committees and to the floor, and to have that flexibility to be able to lose a Manchin or Sinema or not and on a particular vote. I think it's also important for 2 years from now that we have every Democratic seat in place, because you circulated a map this week of the Senate race is coming up in 2024, and it is the potential for a bloodbath.
Well, because the Republicans don't look like they can lose any of the 10 that they have to defend. I mean, they're just deep, deep. Things change, but red states. But we've got Democrats in red states like Sherrod Brown in Ohio, who is very popular, and Tammy Baldwin in a purple state like Wisconsin, and John Tester in Montana, which went overwhelmingly for Trump. Now, these people are locally very popular, and they could survive. Joe Manchin is up in 2024. Kyrsten Sinema, and she's likely in Arizona, and she's likely to face a primary because she's been so disloyal to the Democratic Party.
But there are 21 Democratic seats up for re-election in 2024, as opposed to those solid 10 Republicans. And that is a very scary proposition.
Absolutely. And then we've been doing very well in the governor's races as well. I mean, the other statistic that they keep citing about this year is that this is the first time since 1934 that we haven't lost state legislatures and even gained some for the party that is out of power in the White House.
Amazing. Yeah. Shocking. Michigan is just the most heartwarming story of all. All those women being reelected to governor, secretary of state, and my personal favorite, of course, Dana Nessel as attorney general. What a rock star she is.
Dana Nessel, an out lesbian who we came to know before she was attorney general because she was one of the attorneys on the same-sex marriage cases.
And she brought her own same-sex marriage case to defend custody rights for a lesbian couple when, this is an old story, the national organizations told her not to do it. Don't, you will lose. It's terrible. Don't do it. She went ahead anyway. She won the case. It was a huge triumph. And then, to our shock, got herself elected Attorney General of Michigan and has now been reelected. And both houses of the legislature have flipped to the Democrats. And
for the first time in many, many decades.
And they have had some really egregious right-wing Republicans running that legislature in Michigan for years. And the idea that the Democrats could flip it is just mind-boggling.
Well, of course, in Michigan, they were able to put a referendum on protecting reproductive choice on the ballot. And that meant that you had college students and women and our and women allies standing online, especially at these university settings where they were, I guess they were overwhelmed, till 2 o'clock in the morning in order to vote. If you got online by the time the polls closed at, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, you got to vote. You had to stay there. And they stayed there. They were dedicated. And that made such a difference. Look, the new Speaker of the House in Michigan is a black man for the first time. The new Senate leader is a woman for the first time. Virtually all the LGBTQ anti-LGBT school board candidates were rejected out there. An out lesbian trounced an anti-trans candidate. So, you know, this is what we're reading about Michigan, and we're very encouraged.
Well, it's stunning and so heartwarming, and I hope that can be replicated in the future in other states that look hopeless, because Michigan looked really hopeless for a long, long time. And, you know, Gretchen Whitmer had the Proud Boys coming to her doorstep. They invaded the Capitol.
They wanted to kill her.
They did. They were they had a whole plan to kidnap her and kill her. And yet here is the outcome. So couldn't be happier for everybody in Michigan.
And we really dodged a bullet in Arizona in the governor's race. In the governor's race. Katie Hobbs there on the left defeated Carrie Lake. Hobbs was a social worker who worked with homeless youth. Lake was a TV news anchor. And a former liberal and, of course, friend of drag queens. I mean, Carrie Lake, such a liar and a hypocrite. She campaigned on, this is what she said during the campaign. They kicked God out of the schools and welcomed drag queens. They took down our flag and replaced it with a rainbow. Let's bring back the basics. God, guns, and glory. Of course, it used to be reading, writing, and arithmetic. After she lost, her one-time drag queen friend Richard Stevens posted about for me it's an obscure reference to Game of Thrones, but he just said, "Tell Carrie I want her to know it was me," signing Barbara Seville, which is the drag character that Richard Stevens played right in front of Carrie Lake and her daughter when they were friends
at her house. People are still predicting that Trump is going to pick Carrie Lake as his running mate. He has a panoply of possibilities. But I have to say that I like to pride myself on my read of these races. I was totally out to lunch on Carrie Lake. I thought she was going to win in a walk. I thought her TV popularity and Katie Hobbs running a very quiet under the radar race was a formula for Carrie Lake winning in Arizona. And again, thank you to the voters of Arizona who saw through all that and elected Katie Hobbs.
Well, Carrie Lake was also running against John McCain. I mean, you know, the late John McCain, and saying we need to bury the John McCain machine and we're done with him. Now, in terms of LGBTQ, the Victory Fund tells us, which tracks these candidates and endorses them, 65% of LGBTQ candidates won their general elections. That's 454 people. 71% of LGBTQ women won. 7% of out trans candidates won. 78% of Black LGBTQ candidates won. And 68% of Latin LGBTQ candidates.
We have our first out LGBTQ members of the legislatures in Alaska and South Dakota, the only states now that haven't had LGBTQ representatives in their legislature are Louisiana and Mississippi. There was someone who was a bad gay in Mississippi, but was not out in office and I think was thrown out easily.
Now, we got to deal with some of the bad news, too. The embrace of lots of anti-LGBTQ Republicans that went on in many places, especially Ron DeSantis in Florida. There he is coming in on election night. He's a professional bully, but he polled 59% of the vote. Now, last time he only got 50% or less than 50% when he won. And they also, the state has gone much to the right. He drew the lines for the legislature and Congress and everything. So Florida has gone off the charts.
Yeah, it's headed deeply in the wrong direction. But 11 Democrats were elected with double-digit wins in the governor races around the country. 16 Republicans got double-digit wins, some of them quite enormous. So while everyone's sort of crowing about DeSantis's big 60-40 win, he did not have the biggest margin of any of these governor races.
And you know, the Republicans have been drawing the lines in many of these states for years. In the North Carolina House and the Wisconsin Assembly, however, Democrats staved off supermajorities of Republicans, which is critical because they have Democratic governors who can now use their veto power. And then, of course, you know, there was some bright lights in red states. South Dakota voted for Medicaid expansion, overruling the governor there and the legislature, joining other states in doing so. Maine, Idaho, Utah, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Missouri. This is, a liberal reform by the voters because the people they elected won't do it.
Yeah, I mean, again, the results are so mixed and the country is so divided, and there you want to cheer the voters of South Dakota and Michigan and Arizona. And then you turn around to Florida and you think, who are these people that they would fall for DeSantis? So it's hard to know where we're headed in the long run.
But at least four states voted to limit involuntary servitude under the Constitution. It says no involuntary servitude except as punishment for crime. And that turns prisoners into slaves. And Alabama, Tennessee, Vermont, and Oregon voted to get rid of it. Louisiana didn't, but they said it was worded too confusingly.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was just going to mourn the loss of Will Rollins, the out gay candidate for Congress in California.
Who, very narrow loss.
Yeah. He was going against an incumbent, a pretty conservative Republican, although he changed his tune a little when Palm Springs was added to his district. But there were still not enough votes there to overcome his incumbency. Will Rollins ran a great race, but
It was very close.
Yeah.
It was 51.5 to 48.5. I mean, you know, it's very close.
Well, as I said to you earlier, this year that's a landslide.
Hey, in Nevada, voters passed a sweeping equal rights amendment. It ensures equal rights regardless of race, color, creed, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression. It's the most comprehensive ERA in the nation, and it passed 58 to 42. 58 to 42.
And Catherine Cortez Masto, thank you, hung on to win the Senate. So Nevada's doing okay, too.
California's the
Although
first
Although they elected a Republican governor, which is not so good.
Getting rid of the incumbent. California is the first state with 10%, at least 10% LGBTQ legislators, and that may go higher. Four incumbent assembly members won re-election, and between four and seven new out LGBTQ legislators will take office apparently on December the 5th. There are four out senators serving terms that go through 2024.
Now, do you want to discuss Chase Oliver in Georgia?
Sure. In Georgia. So, you know, the reason we have a runoff in Georgia is nobody got 50%. And part of that reason is because the Libertarian candidate there, Chase Oliver, got 2.07%. He is an out gay and has marched in pride parades with a "Don't Tread on Me" rainbow flag. He refers
to himself as armed and gay.
Yeah. But there's no telling where his votes are going to go. I think when people vote for third party, they're just protesting. They may not even show up the next time. It's hard to tell where his votes will go. He favors ranked choice voting, so we wouldn't have to go through this, which would be a nice idea. He doesn't favor either of the people running. He says they're both cogs in the machine. But he, you know, as a young man, he launched his high school's gay straight alliance. He backed Obama back in the day, but he felt betrayed when Obama didn't, you know, close Guantanamo.
I can't argue with that. I think he did it for, with good values. And I repeat, I think Warnock's got a leg up in this race. And I think the Republicans, here's what I assume. Republicans, having lost the Senate already, will have less incentive to go to the polls to elect Walker and will stay home.
That may be the vote. I mean, they're pouring, of course, it'll end up being hundreds of millions of dollars into this thing. And they're going to try to tell Republicans, put a check on Chuck Schumer or something.
Well, they may say they're pouring hundreds of millions of dollars in it, but as Herschel Walker discovered, he's only getting 10% of the donations supposedly earmarked for him.
By the way, the Right to Die made advances across the country, and the new governors are supporting it. Hawaii's Josh Green, Massachusetts' Maura Healey, Maryland's Wes Moore, Oregon's Tina Kotek, who's lesbian, as is Healey. And then incumbent supporters like Ned Lamont of Connecticut and Phil Scott, a Republican of Vermont, also supported.
And all the bad Secretary of State candidates lost across the country. The fact that the voters have rejected these extremist Republicans is very heartening. So race by race, and they picked them out here and there. They were able to defeat those people who were very, very dangerous going forward. So,
and where did they waste a lot of money? They spent $50 million, by one account, on anti-trans ads across the country alone. Doesn't seem to have worked, though it did stoke a lot of hatred. We should talk about what happened in Vallejo, California.
Well, before we get to that, just let me finish off a little on these election things.
Sure.
School boards, very mixed results on school boards, because you mentioned all the money put into anti-trans ads. Some places those worked, and the Moms for Liberty types elected school board members in various places around the country, including one race in Indiana where an 80-year-old guy, right-wing Republican, got so angry at all this woke stuff in the schools that he ran for election and won in Lafayette, Indiana, and is pledge to stop all the critical race theory and sex discussion and gay stuff, gay teachers and flags and banners. But there are other school boards where progressives were elected and that kind of advertising was seen through. So I think the fights are going to continue, certainly at that level. And
well, there is a liberal group raising thousands of dollars for those campaigns, but the conservative groups are literally pouring millions into those races.
There are. But some, for instance, in Florida, some bad school boards were flipped to progressive majorities. And that's, you know, in a the year of DeSantis wave, that's pretty good news.
And look what happened this week. Four Supreme Court justices attended and got standing ovations from the partisan Federalist Society that got them installed on the Supreme Court with dark money. And the confidence of the American people in the courts has never been lower.
Well, for good reason. And that is, of course, one of the main reasons that the Democrats did do as well as they did in these elections, because people were shocked by the Supreme Court.
Well, I mean, too late. We raise the issue of the Supreme Court every election. It's so important. But it obviously is not one that had resonated until the Dobbs decision on abortion.
So much ignorance on all of this across the country, and we are constantly astonished at the low levels of knowledge. But a lot of those people came out and voted for progressive candidates in the end, and that's very hard.
We should mention that Thursday, depending on when you're seeing this, November 17th, is the Trans Day of Remembrance. And, you know, we had a report from VAO, California, Sunday of two trans people shot near a homeless camp. One died from injuries, the other in critical condition. Police arrested someone, have not necessarily identified them as a suspect. The victims were 31 and 27, but they haven't been given names yet, from what I have.
Yeah, I mean, none of this election stuff is going to stop that. Let's go to the Biden administration for a minute, long as we're looking nationally. A year ago or so, we were celebrating the appointment of an out-gay law enforcement leader, Chris Magnus, to run the Customs and Border Protection.
Now he was the sheriff in Tucson.
I don't remember exactly where he was from, but he was a very progressive law enforcement chief, and that he's the one holding the Black Lives Matter sign there from his previous employment. So he goes to the Customs and Border Protection organization, working under Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, and he wants to take a progressive attitude towards migrants and refugees. And the Border Patrol, an extremely right-wing organization, gets up in arms about him and says, you know, we're not going to deal with this guy who has all these fancy ideas. We need to crack down on these immigrants. He's terrible. We want to get rid of him. And Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, caves and forces him out of office. So Magnus is forced to resign because the Biden administration has caved to the union of Border Patrol agents who just want to be able to beat the hell out of people and stop them from coming into the country.
Well, they want
treating them humanely.
The Republicans want Secretary Mayorkas out. They're even talking about impeaching him, which they could do if they control the House.
Exactly. And I think in the face of that, that is why he caved. Not that they can impeach him. I mean, they can impeach him in the House, but just like Trump, he can certainly survive a Senate vote, or should be able to. Who knows what this new Senate will do. But it's shameful. It's shameful that Magnus was forced out of office by right wingers in the Border Patrol, many of whom are, of course, associated with the Oath Keepers or Proud Boys. They're doing double duty there. And it's just horrible that they've been able to exercise this power.
Well, let's give them some better news that we're hopeful for. It's Tuesday when we're taping, and we were told there's going to be a vote in the Senate, a cloture vote on the Respect for Marriage Act bipartisan bill. They're confident they have the votes, and explain.
Okay. The Respect for Marriage Act is proposed in anticipation of the Supreme Court overturning the pro-same-sex marriage Obergefell decision and the Windsor decision that got rid of the Defense of Marriage Act. People listen carefully to what Clarence Thomas said in the abortion decision, where he said, now let's move on to getting rid of the right to contraception and same-sex marriage and privacy in your sexual relations, which is the Lawrence decision.
Well, he didn't mention interracial marriage, but which he is in one. And that also might be on the chopping block by his legal theories. But this Respect for Marriage Act also covers interracial marriage.
Well, it passed the House, and the idea is to have something in place if those Supreme Court decisions get overturned. The version passed in the House has been rewritten a little in the Senate. We thought the Senate would take it up before the midterm elections in order to get Republican senators on the record opposing it so that we could use that as another weapon against them. But Tammy Baldwin and Susan Collins decided that it would be better to wait until after the midterms, because then they might actually get enough Republicans. They need 10 Republicans on the bill and pass it.
And they need Joe Manchin, too, because he's not.
Yes, they do. And Kyrsten Sinema, who, even though she is out bisexual, is no lock on. No, I take that back. She's on the negotiating committee. She has approved this. But in rewriting it for the Senate, they have added a few little twists to guarantee religious freedom for people. Now, it may just be that they're reinforcing churches' ability to refuse to perform same-sex marriages. That would be fine. That's always been there. And to write it just reassures people who didn't know it was already there. But they've also said they've made it a little broader, and that makes us a little nervous. But what this bill would do is repeal officially the Defense of Marriage Act, which is still on the books, even though it has been outlawed by the Supreme Court in the Windsor decision. So this would make sure that if the Windsor decision disappeared, that the Defense of Marriage Act would be gone, because that was what said the federal government did not have to recognize or could not recognize same-sex marriages, even if they were performed legally in a particular state.
States didn't have to recognize same-sex marriages legally performed in other states, which they do in almost all other cases.
So the new version, which is meant to deal with the possible, overturning of the Supreme Court decision, says even if those decisions disappear, it is legal for states to legalize same-sex marriage. The federal government will recognize same-sex marriages legally performed, and other states must recognize same-sex marriages performed legally in other states. There is one little asterisk there. If you are living in, say, Kentucky, and same-sex marriage is no longer legal there because we've gone to a state-by-state system, as we're doing with abortion, if you go to another state to get married and then come back to Kentucky and expect to have your same-sex marriage honored, that is defined as an evasive marriage. And states are not required to recognize evasive marriages. That's not good news.
No.
So the Senate is going to vote on this. Chuck Schumer has scheduled it. They will go through a series of votes. I'm a little cautious about whether I think this is a good bill and the right way to do it. It does not legalize same-sex marriage across the country. It is like the abortion decision, where it would go back to a state-by-state decision. And the only way to overcome the Supreme Court getting rid of those pro-same-sex marriage decisions would be a constitutional amendment. You would have to insert same-sex marriage into the Constitution because the Supreme Court would be saying it's not protected by the Constitution, unless you can come up with an alternate theory of another way that the Constitution might protect those marriages.
Well, so this bill, you know, it also says no nonprofit religious organization would have to provide goods, services, or facilities for the solemnization or celebration of a marriage. But as you say, that was already true. And
right, you know, the right wing would try to stretch that past just a celebration of a marriage, performing a marriage, to any kind of event or service that recognized a same-sex marriage.
Right, right. So, again, because there are changes in the Senate, when they vote on it, it's got to go back to the House if they pass it.
The House will now be controlled by the Republicans. So
no,
we'll
not. No,
oh, no. If it gets there before the end of the year, it will be.
No,
the current
it will,
House.
As it will. All right. And by the way, speaking of same-sex marriage, in Dayton, Ohio, at a Catholic cemetery, a headstone for a gay couple had the date of their marriage removed, chipped off the thing. The surviving partner had been told it wasn't going to be a problem, but the cemetery dug into the rock to expunge it. This guy, Darryl Fry, threatened to sue them, and the cemetery, wait for it, apologized and said, oh, that's terrible. We'll put it back.
So wait a minute. Who took it off? The cemetery?
The cemetery took it off. It's a Catholic cemetery. It had been there for several months, and then somebody in the cemetery decided, oh, my God, two guys. I mean, one of them was dead. The other one was surviving, and they had their marriage date on the stone.
Well, they better not come to the cemetery in the Bronx here, where there is a sculpture of two women entwined in an embrace lying down to celebrate their partnership.
All right. Some other news. And as I, again, remind you, Trans Day of Remembrance, November 17th. Last week, six trans and non-binary high school and college students met with the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, our old pal, Suzanne Goldberg, who's the Deputy Assistant Secretary there, used to be a lawyer with Lambda and a professor, to push for immediate action to protect trans students in school sports. Now, you know, the administration issued a guidance for schools on trans back in June, but they wouldn't mention sports. They said, you got to protect these kids, but not in sports. They didn't say in sports. So said, we need this now.
A Trump appointed judge in Texas has ruled that the Affordable Care Act does not protect LGBTQ people in provision of health care. The Biden administration and the Obama administration had interpreted rules against sex discrimination as including sexual orientation and gender identity. But this judge says, no way. You cannot do that.
He said if the Congress wanted to do that, they would have said sexual orientation and gender identity, and they didn't. So right. This is a lawsuit brought by Stephen Miller's group, the American First something or other, American First Legal Foundation, and they shop around to do these right-wing horrible cases.
Well, they have a whole raft of people in Texas.
By the way,
news. Sorry.
No, I was going to have more violence news, but.
Well, let me throw in a good story before we get to that. The Board of Education of the state of Colorado has mandated that social studies curricula in Colorado include diverse populations, including LGBTQ. It was a 4-3 decision by the Board of Education, and they rejected Republican proposals for a much more restrictive rule.
Okay. Well, this is a good news, bad news story. In Kansas City, Missouri, two police officers pleaded guilty to assaulting a black trans woman 3 years ago. They were finally got their punishment, but this was against Brianna Hill, 31. The assault was outside a beauty store. It was caught on video. The guy who videoed it got arrested. And this led to a change in the law in Kansas City that you can film these things. But so they were charged with third degree assault. But no jail time. They lost their law enforcement license and have 3 years of unsupervised probation. Now, a footnote to this, and it's horrible. The victim, Hill, was later shot and killed in her home in a totally unrelated incident, determined to be self-defense. But her friend said that being assaulted by these cops really broke her spirit.
And these, you know, we get these cases all the time, and the cops are ordered over and over and over again not to arrest people filming or videotaping incidents, and yet they keep doing it. They do exactly what they want to do. They pay no attention to any of these rules or laws that are imposed on them. They just do what they want to do.
And they're also not supposed to beat up trans people viciously, which is what they
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
All right. We have, in New York, we told you about how we have a picture of these guys. A young Julio Ramirez got into a cab with a stranger after leaving a gay bar right here in the theater district, the Ritz. And he was drugged and robbed, and he died in the cab. Shocking. Nobody arrested for it. Now we're learning about, back in May, a young gay man from D.C., John Umberger. You have pictures of these, Rich?
I have a picture of the two guys side by side.
This guy, Umberger, met a similar fate after leaving Q Bar in Hell's Kitchen. That's Ramirez on the left and Umberger on the right. Now, Umberger's mother, who's named Linda Clary, is sounding the alarm about this pattern, which she said makes young gay people vulnerable everywhere across the country. She said detectives are now looking into 14 similar deaths from what they were ruled to be drug overdoses, but these guys may be, have been injected with something by their assailants. Councilmember Eric Botcher in our district is pushing for more transparency from the DA, Alvin Bragg, who promises to share more updates, devote more resources to it. The guy on the right, Umberger, his mother was so upset, she endorsed Lee Zeldin so she could go after Alvin Bragg for not doing anything about this. But, you know, this reminds me a little bit of the Sydney thing when they were throwing people off cliffs. You know, they're just eliminating gay men in this case, or bisexual men, and nothing is done about it because nobody's looking at the pattern.
Well, that's certainly a traditional outcome. In this case, they seem to have been robbing them. I don't know if they were robbing the guys that were thrown off the cliffs. Maybe
no.
That was just for sport. But one way or another, these attacks take place and the authorities don't want to deal with it.
Okay.
All right. Let us talk about the brouhaha down at City Hall this week between the anti-trans crowd that is on a nationwide tour and showed up here in New York and was greeted with these protesters against them with this gorgeous banner saying transphobes, get the F out.
Yes, the TERF, the trans exclusionary radical feminists, were protesting at City Hall with signs like "self love, not surgery," and so they were met with there were 9 arrests at this demonstration when the two groups clashed,
and the 9 arrested were all the pro-trans protesters who had showed up to oppose the TERFs.
Okay. Staying in New York for a second, Governor Kathy Hochul, who was just reelected, she's got 400 bills on her desk, and she has to sign or reject by the end of the year. And on Veterans Day, she did sign our Senator Brad Hoyleman's bill to give a boost to people in the military who were discharged, who weren't getting all their benefits, who were gay. And that's in advance. We also learned from a study this week, I'm just going to put this in here, that the much vaunted GI Bill, under which returning veterans got federal funds to go to college, they would deny it to blacks all the time if they didn't want to go to higher education. You know, go to a trade school, things like this. So there's a bill in the Senate by our Democrats to rectify this and essentially give reparations for these people that were absolute. One guy got into Harvard after the war, and they wouldn't give him the money to go to Harvard. They denied it. It's just terrible.
In Idaho, the state has settled a suit brought by the ACLU and has agreed to, hold on, it's getting darker in my apartment. They will remove men from the sex registry convicted for consensual oral and anal sex. They had just kept putting people on the sex registry for consensual sex, and the ACLU brought suit, and the state has now admitted that maybe that wasn't the right thing to do.
Well,
sex offenders, that's who they are, sex offenders for consensual adult sex.
Sure. Look, we still ought to issue pardons to all the people who got arrested for that.
And reparations.
In Michigan, voters in Jamestown Township, this is an ongoing saga, once again voted in this election down the millage, the funding for the Patmos Library for the next 10 years. 56% said no, sparked by right-wing attacks on books such as Gender Queer Memoir and other LGBTQ books that the library refused to ban. Private donors stepped in for a year of funding and donated $265,000, but that's not going to take them through 10 years. So
no.
It might have to close.
Unlikely to continue. Well, that's the bad story for Michigan after all the good news we told you earlier.
That's a small town.
Sorry?
It's a small town.
Yes. Well, not so small is the Trevor Project, which is a huge organization. It has become the default organization for fundraisers, celebrities. Everybody gives to the Trevor Project, which is a great hotline to prevent suicide and to talk to people who are in trouble. But the leader of the Trevor Project, Amit Paley, has been charged with a conflict of interest for being a consultant 6 years ago for Purdue Pharma. And he has been ejected from his job.
That he was criticized for that. And people said it's outrageous. You know, this is why people kill themselves, opioid epidemic and all that kind of stuff. But what really got him fired was that staff overwork. As the organization rapidly grew, I mean, by 10 times so rapidly, he said, well, you know, we can't spend all this time with all these people calling us up. You're going to have multi-chats with a whole bunch of people at the same time. And the workers said, I'm losing track of who I'm talking to. I'm giving them the wrong advice since you can't do this. And this was the thing that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, bad management. You'd think that with them increasing their income by tenfold or whatever, that they could have hired more people.
Well, the co-founder, Peggy
Raske,
who I know because she was the producer of the Trevor film that won the Academy Award, short film about a cute film about a boy, a gay boy contemplating suicide. She's stepping in to be the interim CEO.
And we mourn the death of Kevin Conroy.
Conroy,
who was the, as it says on this slide, beloved voice of Batman for many years, the animated Batman, and occasionally putting a line into a Batman movie. But he was 66 years old, died of cancer. Leaves his husband, Vaughn Williams, and he was a superstar.
Yep.
People lost their minds over him. He was so popular.
When he went to Juilliard, he roomed with Robin Williams.
Yes. So a big loss to the gaming and animation community, the Marvel Comics community, and very sad at a young age. All right. Well, we have nattered on, so we better start zipping through the rest.
Yeah, I don't have a ton of international news, but we're going to keep you updated about the World Cup in Qatar or Q-A-T-A-R, however you pronounce that. It begins on Sunday. It runs through December 18th in this very anti-LGBTQ country. By the way, over there, women are asked to hide their shoulders and legs. Men are not supposed to wear shorts. Or sleeveless tops. No public affection for anybody, particularly for same-sex couples, and drunkenness can give you 6 months in prison. So what's on the screen there is the USA team response to this, which is we're painting our logo in rainbow colors because of the way you treat gay people. FIFA banned Denmark from wearing pro-human rights shirts during a practice round. But captains from several European teams still plan to wear rainbow-colored armbands reading One Love.
I like that logo. I think that's a terrific logo. Very attractive. I don't always...
I hope it makes right-wing heads explode.
That would be nice.
And Peter Tatchell is leading a protest in London on Saturday and at 1 o'clock at the Qatar embassy. Maybe there are going to be others around the world. Some people in New York are talking about it. So, yeah.
There's been an ongoing fight in Hong Kong over attempts to legalize same-sex marriage, particularly lawsuits brought by one guy who got married in New York and went back to Hong Kong and has been applying for recognition of his marriage. He has failed several attempts, but the Court of Appeal in Hong Kong has now said that he is allowed to take his case to the highest court, the Court of Final Appeal, and so he will do so. We'll see whether he gets anywhere with that. With the mainland China controlling Hong Kong now, there's less of a chance.
In Canada, one of their top literary prizes, the Giller Prize, has gone to a poet and novelist, Suzette Mayer, M-A-Y-R, a lesbian of German and Afro-Caribbean heritage. She for her novel *The Sleeping Car Porter*, like a porter on a train. She's a past president of the Writers Guild of Alberta. She said, "A shout out to my LGBTQIA two-spirit plus brothers and sisters, siblings, many of whom, like my main character in the book Baxter, are still too scared to come out or cannot come out because to do so would be too dangerous. I love you. This book is for you."
The book is about a closeted black gay man who's a train porter in 1929. And she got $100,000 for that literary prize.
Okay.
All right. AIDS news.
Well, the U.S. military is being sued over its policy banning people with HIV from joining the military. A gay Georgia police officer, Isaiah Wilkins, there he is, 23 years old, says the policy is outdated and he's being denied his dream of becoming an Army helicopter pilot. It's a Lambda case, which earlier this year won the right for HIV-positive military people to serve overseas and to be commissioned as officers.
Yeah, the trick is if you join the military and sometime during your service discover that you are HIV positive, you can continue to serve. And that has been expanded to overseas service. But if they find out you're HIV positive before you get into the military, they will reject you. And their whole rationale for this is that it's too much trouble to take care of someone who has an illness. So they regularly reject people they think are going to be too much trouble, and HIV has been in that category.
Okay.
Not sensible.
Last night, my friend Ann Northrup was honored at the Treatment Action Group's Research in Action Awards. There she is getting her award from, I'm sorry, it's not a better picture of Ivy Arce, but Ann gave a wonderful speech that we will link to in our email. And you can go to our email at gayusatv.org, go to our website, sign up for our email. We send you links like this. I put it on my Facebook page if you follow me there. But also honored was Laura Morrison, who was 30 years ago, was one of the founding board members, Dr. Amita Gupta and Dr. Kelly Elise Dooley. They're both doing wonderful work around TB and eradicating TB and AIDS.
So honored to have Ivy Kwan Arce introduce me, a woman who's been living with HIV for 33 years, gave her little introductory speech in three languages, which confused the audience a little, just what I like, but eventually moved to English so people figured it out. TAG is a great organization. They do great work. Too bad that we have to keep working on these issues, but they work on them around the world for research for a cure, for treatment, for prevention, for TB, as well as HIV and Hep C and everything else.
And Ms. Northrup talked about the fun of being an activist for all these decades.
Yes, I decided to get out of the science since I'm not qualified to talk about that and talk about the fun of activism. You can see my picture as a 1966 Boston debutante if you go look at the speech.
All the more reason to sign up for our email list. Go to our website. And while you're there, make one of those donations so we don't have to factor you on Giving Tuesday or something. Help us out. Help us keep going. Okay, entertainment news?
Yes. I am excited by the return of the L Word Generation Q, which is coming up this weekend, I think, or maybe next, on Showtime Season 3. All the drama about Bette and the other one, and will they get back together? It's very, very, very exciting.
Well, on World Kindness Day, which was Sunday, they made a new addition to Madame Tussauds. It was Pose and Broadway star Billy Porter. Now, that's his wax statue there on the right that they're putting the finishing touches on. That's him on the left, huh?
Yes, that is him at the 2020 Grammy Awards. And frankly, I think him in real life with that curtain of crystals around the hat and the extreme eye makeup is a lot more attractive and interesting than what they're doing with the statue of Madame Tussauds.
Although they've gotten a good likeness of Billy there on the right.
But it's dull compared to the real life Billy. And frankly, I think they missed the boat on what image they chose.
If Joe Biden was wearing that outfit, you wouldn't say it was dull.
Well, it's not Joe Biden. And maybe I would. But this is the outfit from the Oscars a couple of years ago that they really should have picked. Because that's really a fun outfit. And I think a lot more representative of Billy these days.
And did you watch Saturday Night Live, Dave Chappelle?
I did.
I did too. He's moved on to Jews from trans people. People are laughing, and you know what? It's ugly. You could argue it's a subtle form of humor about the way we talk about these issues these days. But his goal is to, poke at people, and he generally punches down.
Well, he was talking about Kanye and Kyrie Irving and anti-Semitism. I thought it was a little too subtle, but I think he's now scared of the trans stuff. He stayed away from it.
I don't know. I was disappointed that they had him on. Judy Gold was on, said he's a friend of mine, but she didn't, as a Jew, she was offended. Okay. And she wrote a book about not being offended by humor.
Yeah. Also very excited for the upcoming return of Sex Lives of College Girls on HBO Max. Did you watch that series?
No.
This is season 2. It is hilarious. There are a lot of these series that sound with a title like that, that it's going to be smarmy and provocative. But this is just a good old comedy about college girls, and it is really very funny, and that's coming back to HBO Max momentarily. Highly recommended. And I hope you've all caught up with Dairy Girls on Netflix, because that's the best.
So much to catch up on.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Why don't we... bring you the video that we had wanted to bring you last week from Urvashi Vaid's memorial service. That we had this memorial service. They produced a nice little film of excerpts from her speeches over the years. Great lesbian leader. Let's roll the videotape.
With hearts full of love and with an abiding faith in justice, we have come to Washington to speak to America.
As a younger activist, I believed in utopia and hard work. I guess you could say I was an idealist with a practical streak.
We live in a pluralistic society, and I believe in it, and I'm committed to it, and that's what I'm fighting for. I'm fighting for the space to live my life freely and in peace.
My idea of utopia was a society that distributed the benefits of its prosperity more widely. like legions of progressive activists, I committed myself to achieving this redistribution through the work of the social movements that I joined. What I think the movements of the 60s failed to do was to tackle the structural inequalities in American society, equalities which arise from the consequences of a morally bankrupt and absolutely out of control economic system. You wanted to hear the other side of the equation, and I'm going to put it out to you.
She may be the most courageous coming in here today, and I want to hope she'll get all of your respect. Irby Shivad.
Progressive politics is, for many of us, a politics of intersection, not identity affiliation alone.
Just here to stand up as a lesbian. I'm here as a woman. I'm here as an immigrant. I'm here against racism. I'm here for health care for all. I'm here for freedom of expression. I'm here to change the status quo because I believe in America and I believe in the future of this country.
As Adrienne Rich wrote, the connections between and among women are the most feared, the most problematic. Don't we know that? And the most potentially transforming force on the planet. I love being a lesbian. I love it. I'm an optimist, and I really believe that change is gonna come and change is happening all the time. And I'm also struck by how I did not think that I would see the changes that I've seen in my lifetime.
When all of us who believe in freedom and diversity see this gathering, we see beauty and power. When our enemies see this gathering, they see the millennium. Well, perhaps the religious right is about something. We call today for the end of the world as we know it. We call for the end of racism and sexism and bigotry as we know it. For the end of violence and discrimination and homophobia as we know it. For the end of sexism as we know it, we stand for freedom as we have yet to know it, and we will not be denied.
There she was, kissing her spouse, Kate Clinton, who spoke beautifully at the service as well. Irby Shivad, gone at 63.
Yeah, a very, very huge loss. An enormously important activist in our lives and our movement. And glad to be able to show you that. And
we're still here.
We are.
I'm glad you are as well.
Yeah. And we will see you next week.